Welcome to Notes from a Drama Watcher, a podcast about East Asian dramas. It's part recap, part review, and there will definitely be spoilers ahead. Hi, this is your host, Em. This is episode 37 of Notes from a Drama Watcher. Welcome if you're new, and welcome back if you've been here before. In this episode, we're going to talk about Be My Favorite. Episodes 11 and 12 would be my favorite, so 12 was the final episode. And then Laws of Attraction, episodes 4 and 5. So we're going to start off with Be My Favorite, episode 11. In episode 11, Kawi moves in with Pisang, and we see the changes that occur in their relationship and their lives as the years pass by. We see that Max, Per, Kwan, and Pisang and Kawi have formed a tight friend group, and I was glad not to see Not there, because actually Not is in their graduation photos, and I was kind of like, what is he doing there? He's a jerk. I didn't really see him changing. I was wondering if at some point they would show us that in the future he had changed in some way, but they didn't really show us much about Not, and that's fine with me. As I said, they're together years down the road, and they receive a invitation to Pear's wedding. She has found her partner. It's someone named James. And at the same time we see them receiving the invitation, we see that Pisang is slightly ill and somewhat concerning to Kawi, who takes care of him. And Pisang does get better, but unfortunately Kawi also falls ill, but it hits him much harder. All they say in the episode is that he has a virus in his lungs, but I was actually wondering whether or not it was that he had COVID, which then actually made me wonder in general about his health, because after all, his father did have a heart condition. So I was wondering if it could be something hereditary. I don't know if I missed it, but the last date, so as the years were going by, as time was going by, they were showing like the calendar changing and stuff. So the last thing I saw was 2021. I don't know if it went, they must have gone past that, but you know, that would have been COVID. At its height. I don't know when the height of it was in Thailand, but he's in the hospital and they don't seem to know kind of exactly what to do with him. And Pisang is really upset because he recovered really quickly from whatever it was. You know, why is Kawi being hit so hard by it? And that's kind of how COVID was, right? Some people didn't even realize they had it, but they did. It showed up in their system. Some people just had symptoms of a mild cold, and unfortunately, many people passed away from it. But even if it wasn't COVID, that's the case with a lot of virus and bacteria. Some people recover from things and some don't, you know, et cetera. Which, again, that's what made me wonder about Kawi's health. So Pisang is getting more and more beside himself as Kawi gets sicker and sicker. Eventually, Kawi winds up in the ICU where they have to perform a tracheotomy in order for him to be able to breathe. So they have to put a hole in his throat. And Pisang starts to think about when Kawi told him that he had traveled through time using the globe. And so in his moment of desperation, he picks up the globe to see if it works. And he twists it and he does travel in time. And that's actually where episode 11 left off. I'm glad that there was no big misunderstanding between them in episode 11. I do appreciate that kind of angst in a lot of shows. I'm not someone who's completely against that. I know some people hate that, but I'm not completely against it if it's done well. But I'm glad they kind of went for a different route here. And they show that sometimes our biggest trials and obstacles come from outside of ourselves. And there are things that are just out of our hands. And I have to say, Gawin did a really good job in this episode of portraying the confusion and the helplessness of someone whose loved one is ill. Especially the confusion when it happens to someone who until recently seemed healthy, you know, young and healthy. There was also the added problem of Pisang and Kawi not being related to one another. So let me explain a little more. When Pisang brings him into the hospital and he's so ill, the doctor's asking Pisang, does Kawi have any relatives? And, you know, Pisang, you know, is kind of like, I'm his relative, you know, I'm his partner. Like, that's the look on his face, but because Thailand does not have marriage equality and they are not married, Pisang doesn't really qualify as a relative as far as the medical establishment goes. And so the doctor is trying to ask him, does he have other relatives, etc.? But there is no one, right? Kawi only had his father. But it was important that they show this scene Because they're looking for the doctor's like, does he have relatives? Well, let's say he had a third cousin that he met once in his life. That person has more right to make a medical decision for him than the person who's actually he's actually living with and is in partnership with. So it's important that they show this kinds of thing on the show. Because some people, right, they feel like, oh, well, they can live together. That's fine. We just don't want people getting married. But this shows you the actual real life consequences of it. So it was important that it was there. Now, episode 12, we see Pisang actually travel back in time to the day that he and Kawi went to the amusement park together. It's kind of a day of turmoil for Pisang because he's glad to be with Kawi, but it's also weighing very heavily on him that he knows 10 years in the future, Kawi's lying in a hospital bed in the ICU, as far as he knows, on the verge of death. I did like that they showed he has open communication with Kawi because Kawi, as an experienced time traveler, kind of senses that this Pisang is from the future, right? Just from his reactions to things and stuff like that. So he gets Pisang to admit that he traveled through time, even though Kawi already guessed it. And importantly, Kawi leaves it to Pisang to figure out what he can do about Kawi getting sick in the future. Pisang eventually realizes, though, that he would not change anything since he loves the life that he and Kawi have built together. And Kawi feels like he wouldn't change anything either, even though he hasn't experienced those things yet, right? Because he's the Kawi from the past. But he knows Pisang is the person for him because Pisang, which I knew he was going to bring up. Pisang brings up the idea of like, well, what if we weren't together? But Kawi doesn't really want to go for that because he feels Pisang is the person for him. And also when Pisang said that, I'm thinking, I knew he was going to say that, but there are no guarantees in life. First of all, there's no guarantee that Kawi even got the illness from Pisang. Pisang is assuming since Kawi got ill right after him, but maybe they just both got it from someone else and it just manifested first in Pisang. There's no way of knowing. So them not being together is not going to stop either one of them from getting sick, possibly. Like anything can happen. And I think Kawi also learned through him traveling back and forth and trying to prevent the death of his father that you can drive yourself crazy trying to change things like that. And when he tried it, things just kind of got worse and worse. And I think he's probably thinking like there's just some things you can't change. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And why break them up over something that may not help anyway? The important thing is for them to love each other and to hold each other's hands. They have a whole thing going about holding each other's hand when they're scared, in this episode. And that's the important thing, that they both found the right person for them, and neither one of them really wants to change that. So, pretty good episodes. Very good show overall. Gawin and Chris, that was a revelation for me that they would have such good chemistry. I just didn't know that they would. Everything I've seen Gawin, well, everything, it's not like it's been so many things. Dark Blue Kiss and Not Me. He definitely had chemistry with First. Although I kind of feel like First has chemistry with everybody. But he had good chemistry with First and he had good chemistry with Pod. So I was felt like, well, let me give him a chance. Chris, I've only seen him as far as BLs go. I've only seen him with Sing To, and they were good together. But I just wasn't sure what was going to happen here. And I was pleasantly surprised at the chemistry that they had together. The overall storyline was quite interesting. The idea of time travel. I'm very into science fiction, as I mentioned before. They didn't get really heavy into the science fiction-y part of it because that wasn't the purpose of the show. It wasn't like a science fiction show in that sense. It was more a show about growth. Kawi's growth, Kawi's, I guess, acceptance of things he couldn't change, and showing him about treasuring the people he had around him who stood by him and opening his eyes to who it was around him that was really sticking by him and who was best for him, really. And I'm not sure what, well, I guess Pisang, his lesson was for that last episode, I guess. First of all, to just erase any doubt about Kawi's story. He now knows 100% for sure, yes, Kawi time traveled. But also he learned, I guess, about not trying to go back and forth and change things and to just love the life that they had. And it seems like it was a good life. But that last, or the last episodes were very focused on just Pisang and Kawi. They did show Pear and Max because those are the best friends, right? But it was very heavily focused on Pisang and Kawi, which makes sense. The show is about them, and we get to see their kind of the final moments with them, to how they express their love for each other and their hopes for the future. Pisang really wants to get married. Kawi's saying he's not sure, but he's already kind of planning the wedding. So we just get to see that they've got hopefully a long, happy life and partnership together. I would not object to seeing Gawen and Chris together again in something. I think it'd be interesting if they do more series. So that was be my favorite. And I will admit, not that I lost my excitement for Be My Favorite. I still really enjoyed episodes 11 and 12, but it's been very overshadowed for me by Laws of Attraction. Laws of Attraction is definitely my current favorite that I'm watching. So, as I said, I'm going to talk about episodes 4 and 5 here. Episode 4 was a really good episode. At the end of episode 3, we see Chan and Tin get into an argument because that's when, after Chan had set fire to the house, and Tin got upset and told him, you could have hurt me, you could have hurt grandma, etc. They get into an argument. That's where Chan tells Tin that his way of being is weak and he can't protect anyone, etc. And so in episode 4, we see Tin kind of stewing over this and upset about what Chan said. And he decides he's going to find Ten Thai to confront him and to find out exactly what happened that night and why he hit his knees, just what happened. And so he does confront him, and he gets into a fight with the bodyguards, who I don't know if they don't know much about Tin or they forgot or whatever, but Tin basically kicks all their butts because he is a taekwondo teacher. And he goes after Ten Thai to see if to try to get him to tell him what happened. But while he's confronting him, T, Ten Thai's personal bodyguard, I guess, gets up and is able to come after him and holds a gun to him. And so he stops him from getting the information from Ten Thai. The bodyguards leave, Ten Thai leaves, etc. And T stays behind and talks to Tin, trying to get Tin to back off. But Tin is like, I need to know what happened. Stop protecting Ten Thai. He doesn't care about people like us. And T's just listening to this and getting upset. And finally is like, he's not like that. Things are not what they seem like. And that's, I mean, a lot of us have kind of suspected it, right? But this is when it's like, okay, Ten Thai is probably not the one who hit Tin's knees. And Tin is realizing something's going on here. But T lets him go. Tin goes home, and at home, everyone is waiting for him because they don't know where he is. They don't know what's going on. And one of the people waiting for him is Chan. And Tin, who's already mad and has been beat up and is probably in pain and whatever, and still hurt from their previous argument about the fire, just lets loose on Chan, saying he doesn't care for anyone, he's tricky, etc. And this clearly hurts Chan's feelings. Once again, film does really well in this role because you can see in his eyes how hurt he is by what Tin is saying to Chan. And at the same time, well, he says he's right about me, I'm a bad person, I'm evil. But when he says I'm evil, his voice breaks. And he says, like, how do I expect people to look at me in a good light? And then he kind of smiles, one of his fake smiles. And Jam, playing Tin at the same time, his expression changes very slightly, right? It's this micro expression that he knows he got Chan right in the heart. And Jam is able to really portray that. Now, I talk a lot about film, and that's just because I know film's other work and I really like him, etc. But Jam, I've got to hand it to him. He's really able to keep up with film in this show. And it's if you see interviews with Jam, he considers himself like an inexperienced actor who's trying to learn from other people. I think he's learning very well. I mean, he always says he's learning from film, And I don't feel like he's a new actor when I see him. You know, I guess he's done a number of support roles, so he's not brand new. But as far as being a lead, he's kind of new to that. He did To Sir with Love with film also. But he was good there too. I don't feel like a sense of rookie actor from him. And I don't know if it helps or hurts to play against a somewhat of a veteran like film. I mean, film is still young. Film is 30, I think it is. But he's been since the mid 2010s. He's been around. So he's got years under his belt. So I don't, you could be easily, as an actor, you could be intimidated by working with someone like that. But I don't think Jam is intimidated by it. He's just really stepping up to the plate, and I'm glad to see it. When you watch this show, you really feel like you're getting two serious actors up there. They don't look embarrassed by what they're doing. They're not hesitating about whatever they're doing. They seem really comfortable with each other, these actors, and it really shows in their roles. They're both playing their roles really well. Now, getting back to film goes through a lot in this episode because, or let me not say film, Chan goes through a lot in this episode. First, he's read the Riot Act by Tin, and then he goes to see the senator, and the senator is kind of threatening him and saying, first of all, the senator knows that it was Chan who set fire to the house. And the question is, how does he know that, right? Obviously, there's a mole somewhere. But also, he's a little bit threatening towards Tin. And Chan is like, goes, if you touch a hair on his head. And that's like, uh-oh. He just let the senator see that he really cares for this guy. And the senator picks up on it immediately. And Chan tries to do his usual fake smile on his face when the senator's like, yeah, I'm not gonna let you threaten me. I have dirt on you too, basically. And he tries to bring back his fake smile, and he kind of can't. He can't really control it. And that's when he really cares for Tin. Even when Tin is like, oh, he doesn't care for anyone, he cares for Tin. And you can see it in the way he let the senator get to him, because in the past, he would not have never let this person get to him. He wouldn't have cared enough about whoever he was trying to protect, you know, after his mother passed. So obviously he cares for Tin. Tin goes to see him at his office to apologize for what he said to him, because actually, I forgot to say, grandma had given him what for, telling him. Chan has done some underhanded things, but he really does care. He was trying to protect us, and tells him the whole reason Chan was even in the house in the first place was because he wanted to see Tin to apologize to him. So Tin had to reflect on his own actions, you know, that he's being a little too rigid in his thinking and in his dealings with Chan. So anyway, Tin goes to see Chan to apologize for what he said, and they make up. And one of the things he does, he actually brings some soup for him that grandma had made for him, kind of as a peace offering. And they're having a whole discussion, and he's telling Chan, you know, don't do anything on your own, be careful. And Chan is so surprised that Tin is worried about him. Surprised and happy that Tin is worried about him. And he actually, again, with the micro expressions, film like furrows his eyebrows a little bit to just kind of show his surprise and delight when Tin just comes out and says, like, yeah, I'm worried about you. I can worry about you the way you worry about me. And maybe that's the first time he's really feeling like Tin is reciprocating his own feelings that he has, even though he's not being really forthright. He's flirting, but as far as like feelings, he's not really being forthright about his feelings. But anyway, they agree to work together from now on, and they hatch a little, we don't see them hatching this plan, but they hatch a little plan to go to to Rose's nightclub, because they know that Tenthai is going to be there with his other drunken buddies, and this gives Tin the opportunity to talk to T, Tenthai's bodyguard. In the meanwhile, we see that Tenthai's father, the senator, has basically set up someone else or picked a scapegoat to take the blame for the accident. And we sort of see a little bit of humanity from Tenthai, He's upset because the scapegoat that they picked is the man who used to be the gardener for their family that he and T used to play with when they were young, and now he's being used as a scapegoat. And he's upset by it, but he tries to cover it up with bravado. But of course, T can see right through this. And we see a slight bit of humanity from Senthai in this case, but since he can't really express his feelings or deal with these feelings, especially not growing up in a household with such an abusive father, his solution is to go party and get drunk. And they go to Rose's bar, which is where Tin and Chan go later. Their whole plan that they had to go see him at the bar. Of course, when they get to the bar, just through observation, they see that Tenthai, as they saw before, actually, after two drinks, he's gone. He's drunk. And while Tin is talking to T, the bodyguard, trying to get some more information, or trying to get him to admit that it was not Tenthai who did it, or whoever it was that hit his niece, Chan is over there talking to one of Tenthai's friends named Beer. And Beer tells him, yeah, I was drinking with him that night, and there's no way he was driving. He's more likely to have fallen asleep. And we see that it's true because actually, at that moment, Tenthai is in the bathroom, knocks out on the floor after only having had two drinks. So, this is our confirmation that it was someone else who hit Tin's niece. Now, part of this scene in the bar is, for anyone who's seen the episode, probably everyone's favorite scene, and that is Jealous Tin because Chan is talking to Beer. Beer is very interested in Chan and is just as flirty as Chan can be, and takes Chan away, like trying to take Chan away from the club. And who comes in at that moment? Swooping in, but Tin grabs Chan around the waist, pulls him over, and is like, no, he's with me. And Beer even, Tin is a good-looking guy, so Beer has no problem with saying, like, that's fine. All three of us can go. And Tin says, nope. No, thank you. I don't like to share. And the funny thing over here this whole time is just Chan is absolutely delighted that Tin is laying claim. He's just there looking at Tin, got this little smile on his face. Tin is, of course, jealous, and he's like, what, did you want to go with him? And no, Chan did not want to go with Beer. That's actually pretty clear. There's no doubt about it because when they're sitting down and Beer's like, come on to my room, and he grabs his arm to get him to stand. You can see Chan's face. He's reluctant to go with him. And you just know in his mind he was scheming some way to get away from him. It's just that Tin happened to swoop in, so he didn't have to come up with anything. But it's good because again, Chan gets a kind of confirmation that yes, Tin does feel something for him, right? It's not just all one-sided. And he even is kind of coy with him, like, yeah, don't be jealous. Like, let's go sit over there. And so they sit down and they talk a little more about what they've discovered. And then everyone's second favorite scene of the episode, probably. And that is when Maya, the singer in the club, is singing a song. And they actually, Tin and Chan, get closer together. They wind up holding hands. And Chan puts his head on Tin's shoulder. And Tin does not move away. It's a very lovely romantic atmosphere. They are clearly, if not in love, they are clearly falling in love. So that's a lot of people's like two favorite scenes. One of my favorite things in this episode is actually way in the beginning. Well, it's partially way in the beginning, and then also when Tin is talking to T, the bodyguard in the club. And that is to say, T's saying, Tenthai feels really sorry for what happens. And Tin points out he's hurting too. If Tenthai is hurting too, right, what's going to make him stop hurting is the truth coming out. And I just keep thinking that as I'm watching episode four and then episode five, he's a tortured kid, mentally tortured person because of his disgusting father. Until the truth comes out about who his father is, he's never going to be free. Even if he's not the one who killed the girl, and I don't think he is. Probably the father did it and set him up to take the blame. And that's always going to be the case, right? The father's always going to be doing things like that, underhanded things like that, as long as he's under his father's thumb. The only way to be free of that is for the truth to come out about the accident and for his father to get whatever it is jail time, whatever it is, because who knows what else he's involved in. If they really killed Tung Kao because of something that her puppy doll recorded, that means he's involved in some other crime. And then probably involved in another crime. He's involved probably in so many things. The only way Ten Thai is going to be free is for the senator to be stopped. So episode four was one of my favorite episodes, probably a lot of people's favorite episodes. Episode five was also good. The story develops a little further. There was evidence, unfortunately, of the budget constraints in this show. They know that there's, as I said before, they know there's a mole somewhere because the senator knows somehow that Chan was the one who set fire to Tin's house. I had been suspecting Wit had done it just because Wit was there. Wit was the one recording the fire. So it made sense to me that he could have easily just sent the recording onto the senator, which is pretty much what happened. It was Wit who betrayed him, and they catch him because they basically set a trap for three different people. They don't know for sure that it's Wit who was the one that was the mole, but they set a trap for different people. Wit fell for the trap. His trap was that they said they had the doll that they had been looking for, that it was in the office. Wit comes to try to steal the doll, and that's when they catch him. What they don't know is Wit also has a backup plan. So he has, while they are confronting him, people come in behind them with guns. A fight ensues because, again, Tin is a Taekwondo teacher, so he starts fighting. Rose is holding her own. Chan cannot fight, as we know. So he's getting into this whole struggle with Wit. Wit takes him into, or basically lures him to another room. And I actually didn't catch this the first time I watched it, except that someone on Twitter was saying, how did this all happen? That a fire got set in the office. And then when I rewatched it, I saw that there was liquid on the floor. So Wit had already set up the room in case he needed to be in there to set fire to the room. And on the second watching was when I realized that Chan had kind of looked down and seen the liquid on the floor. So he knew what was coming, which is why when Wit takes out his lighter to with the flame to throw it down, Chan's already trying to grab the flame, but he was too late. Tin is able to get to him and save him. They escape, but the office in the meanwhile explodes. Which again, someone on Twitter was like, why'd the office explode? But there were bad guys there besides Wit. They could have been rigging the whole office for all we know. But this is where the budget constraints came in. That fire that was in the office, the original one with when just Chan and Wit were in the room, the fire was not that big. He probably could have escaped from there. But then when they run out of the office, Rose, Tin, and Chan run out of the office, and the whole office explodes, that was clearly green screen. It looked green screen, it didn't look good at all. But that's just showing you the budget constraints that the show has. But that does not take away from some more fine acting in this episode. We have Tin and Chan basically, falling further and further in love with each other. We see Ploy, who was Tung Kao's best friend, we see her in a market in the new place where she's living, because remember the family had moved away, and we see that she still got the doll in the bag. That doll is still in play. They still don't have the doll. They still don't know what's on there. There are a few emotional scenes. I'm probably going out of order here, but T and Ten Thai, there's some scenes between them. Ten Thai, not between them, but where they're featured, let's say, because they're not sharing their emotions with each other. Ten Thai is getting more and more distraught. Besides the abuse of his father, the gardener who he had been so upset about before that was being used as a scapegoat, he's killed in prison. Obviously, it's set up by the senator, but it causes Ten Thai to be sick to his stomach. And T is just kind of standing there, like he can't do anything for him. And at one point, Ten Thai says, like, no one wants to be around me, not even you. Like, do you want to be around me? And T doesn't answer. And Ten Thai takes that as a rejection. Now, it's not even romantic, just a rejection of any friendship or whatever. And he kind of shuts down and is like, I'm sorry for asking you such a useless question and for putting you in this position of trying to answer that. The actor playing T, I have not brought this up before. I've been so focused on film and jam. The actor playing T is doing a really good job in his role as well. because he doesn't actually have a lot of lines, but or a lot of lines with Tenthai, I should say. I think he's spoken more to Tin than really than he has to Tenthai, but you can see that he loves Tenthai, and there's a yearning and a wish that he could protect him, and he doesn't feel like he can do anything. And because he doesn't feel like he can do anything, he doesn't feel like he can say anything either. Towards the end of the episode, we see Tenthai's like, I want to be away from here. I want to leave. And I think he's said something similar before. And you see this time, I think T finally thinking, like, the only thing I can do is get him out of here. And actually, in the previews for the next episode, it looks like they are running away. They are confronted, though, so I don't know if they will get away in the next episode. I'm not sure running away is going to help because, again, unless they stop the senator cold, and I mean jail time, or I don't know, someone we wind up killing him before the show ends, I don't know. But unless they stop him, he's always going to be hanging over Tenthai's head. He just can't escape him. I mean, unless they, I don't know, again, episode six, they look like they're trying to run. I don't know if the plan is to leave the country or exactly what the plan is, but he's a senator, so he's got a long reach. So I don't know how far they could possibly run to get away from his reach. The other very emotional scene in this episode is, again, a testament to Jam's acting ability, and that is Chan wants to know more about Tung Kao. They wind up in Tung Kao's room, and Tin is sharing. He's got a little photo album that he's sharing with Chan, and he's talking about his niece, describing, a little girl who was just full of life, who loved her family, who wanted to make her family laugh. He's talking about how she did in school. And it's with this kind of quiet grief. He's not sobbing or anything like that, but it's just this quiet grief and heartbreak and love, absolute love for his niece. And he says, like, I don't want people to remember her because of the murder, as a murder victim. He wants people to remember her as this wonderful, loving, caring child, kid, That's what he wants. And Chan kind of opens up to him a little bit in this moment too. He gives him a hug, which is nice, but he tells him, like, I'm sorry I didn't understand you before. I know what it feels like to lose someone. And you're like, oh, he's finally going to open up. He doesn't say more than that in the moment, but you know that soon he's going to be ready to share with Tin. This whole scene, it really brought to mind to me what I mentioned in my previous podcast about someone on Twitter who had said that Tin was not grieving. And see, this is the kind of scene that I was thinking of, because not everyone grieves the same way. He's not necessarily going to be sobbing, in a corner somewhere. This is his way of grieving. This is his quiet grief. And he's someone who's trying to remember the good and the positive times and share these good and positive things with someone. And that's exactly what he did here. You could see he's very hurt. He misses her a lot. Even though this episode had these kind of sad emotional moments, it also had some lighthearted moments as well. After the law firm has exploded and they need somewhere to go, Rose brings them to a safe house that she has that's under someone else's name so that no one will find them. Tin, of course, is like, oh my gosh, grandma, I have to get grandma. But Maya has already gotten grandma. But as grandma explains, she's no longer grandma, she's Galaxia. I guess that's her stage name. And she comes out with this feather boa and she's dancing and singing. And some people on Twitter were like, they were confused. They didn't know what was going on. And I was like, just look at their eyes, right? Because you see, after she's come out, whatever, she looks at Tin. They just look at each other. And this look is, you can see it's her saying, I'm okay. You're okay. We will be fine. We are together. Again, I've said it before, grandma is strong and she's feisty. And that's what she's showing in this episode. That's what this whole scene was about. She was going to still be out there having fun. And just as long as she was together with Tin and her new, her new grandson, Chan, earlier in the episode, she said that was her new grandson. So as long as she's got her two grandsons with her, she's fine as far as she's concerned, right? That's what she needs right there in the room with her. So in this episode, they also discover where Ploy is, Tung Kha's best friend. So this is their chance to try to go and see if they can find the doll to see what's on it. And it turns out that she moved to a village called Bang Dong Tan. It's probably totally mispronouncing it, but she moved to that village. And you can see as soon as grandma says that name, Chan is taken aback. He's dismayed, is the word. And Rose like immediately looks at him, and you can tell this is the village where Chan was kidnapped and where his mother was killed. So next episode looks like it's going to be very painful for Chan. And actually, so the fun thing about this show and about looking at Twitter or X or whatever it's called, I'm going to still call it Twitter, is that film actually tweets a fair amount about the episodes and about the characters and whatever. And he actually tweeted, episode six is the real Chan. So I think we're finally going to get his story. I mean, we know most of his story, but Tin is finally going to get his story. He's even crying in the preview. Chan is crying. And looks like he's in a little bit of an argument with Tin, and Tin's walking away. But I don't know if Tin is really going to walk away, because actually he's walking away, then the preview stops. He stops and the preview stops. So I think he probably turns around. I'm going to hope he turns around. But I'm looking forward to episode six. I'm looking forward to Chan's story fully coming out for us, because we think we know, but there is some guesswork involved. But I really do want to see how Tin and Chan's relationship evolves from there. Is Chan going to be so hurt that he retreats, or is he going to continue opening up the way he has been doing? I actually don't even know if they're going to get the doll in this episode. That might be in episode seven by the time they get the doll, but I'm just fully invested in the possible emotional turmoil and angst that are going to be in episode six, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to whatever happens with Tien Tendai. Tendai, oh, he's such a difficult character for me, because we know at this point it's probably not him who killed Tung Kha, but he's pretty unlikable in many ways. And then other times you do feel very bad for him. Episode five, I think, went a step further in showing us the very tortured soul that this person is. T believes in him. T sees something there in him. So I want to believe in Tendai. I want to believe that he's a good person underneath. But at the same time, he's, beating the workers up. And I don't know who it was that killed the dog back in episode three. Hopefully it was the senator, because if it was Tendai, then he's still not a good person, But every time I see him, I think of that phrase, hurt people hurt people. He's obviously a hurt person, an emotionally hurt person besides the physical. And because of that, he's lashing out at the world. Now, this show is going to end at episode eight. I don't think they're going to jump to the future, but I would be so interested to see what happens to Tendai in the future. If they finally catch the senator, and it turns out it's the senator who did everything, he's brought to justice, and Tendai is free of him, how will that change his personality? Will he become better? Will we see, actually a sweet person underneath? I don't know, because I don't know what T is seeing. I'm mostly basing this off of the love that T has for Tendai. He sees something in him, or he remembers something in him, from when they were younger, because they did grow up together. So that is it, episode five. Again, this is probably my favorite show of the year so far. Budget constraints aside, I kind of separate that in my mind, right? Because the actors have no control over that aspect of it. So I'm just looking at the acting and, saying such good chemistry. I love seeing older actors, not just university students. And actually, that reminds me, one thing I keep seeing, like on Twitter, people are, when are they going to kiss? When are they going to this do this? When are they going to do that? It's a 131 show. It's not GMMTV. Don't expect a lot as far as like intimacy goes from 131. We may get a kiss. I actually don't even expect more than one kiss, I will be honest. If it was GMMTV, they'd be doing all sorts of things. I mean, look, just look at the trailer. I think Only Friends has already started. If that's what you want, then watch GMMTV, watch Only Friends. 131, it's going to be storyline, chemistry, maybe a hug, maybe a kiss. And the rest will have to be up to your imagination. And actually, I'm fine with that. I want deep storylines. So I am happy to have this. And if I want something else, I'll watch GMMTV. That's what's wonderful about having so much choice now, is that you get to pick and choose what you see. And mostly GMMTV is dominating in the BL market, right? So I want 131 to have its chance. I want this show to be doing well so that they see that there is a market for Lacorn type BL, and hopefully we'll get more. So yeah, next time I will be talking about episodes 6 and 7, probably, of Laws of Attraction. I'm not sure what other show I'll be looking at. I don't know if I mentioned before, I've actually been watching Midnight Museum, but I haven't finished it yet. But I have been watching that. I still haven't finished La Pluie, or whatever way it's pronounced. So that's something else I've been watching. And then Wedding Plan, the series. I don't know if I'm going to talk about it here. That show kind of drives me nuts, to be honest. The whole storyline of it. Like, I think it was episode 5 that just finished. Or was it episode 4? I think it was episode 5. 5 episodes of misunderstanding. That's a lot. I mean, it's cute in its own way, but misunderstandings should only drag on so long. I'm sort of watching it, but then I wind up pausing it. It just, you know, it's like a whole mess when I'm watching the show. So I don't know if I'll review it here. Not quite sure about that one. But anyway, thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. Again, hopefully next time, Laws of Attraction episodes 6 and 7, and whatever else I happen to be watching at the moment. So thanks again for joining me. Stay safe, everyone.